since we are Manasseh, I'm cutting you a little bit of slack. Because, as you know, Manasseh means to forget. So sometimes I like to throw a little bit out there to see, okay, are they on the ball today? Do you remember even what songs that we've sung? How tired are you people? Because I know I still am. We're normally used to taking a little bit of vacation after preteen camp, but we're just too busy. I had to get down to my house in Georgia and appreciate your prayers. It looks like we could have a lease purchase on that house, which would still be great. So if we don't have a buyer, we'll take that. They do want to buy, but are just not able to at this time. So that's a strong possibility for us. So appreciate your prayers there. But seeing that it's been a couple weeks now since I've been here, I'd like to ask you if you remember some of the messages that were given in the past week and where I've been focusing on. And I hope that you'll remember it because it is really important. I'm thinking today as we're coming up here, it gives us the time to really meditate and think about God's ways. Life goes by so quick. And sometimes you stop to think, what's most important in life? And when we leave this life, what are we going to have left? What is the most important thing before God? And I believe it's still very, very important and can be very productive if the first thing that we got did when we get up in the morning is talk to God and say, what is your will for me today? You know, so many important messages that we have all the time. I really hope that we take these to heart because we're building towards something so special and important. That's what makes it so productive and just rewarding to serve these young kids because everything that we're teaching them is going to go on for all eternity. They're getting the basic building blocks and living successful lives and being teachers in the future, and that's where we're also being prepared. So I've got a question for you, a fill in the blank. I have come to do blank blank of him who sent me. Now, I just kind of gave it away, so you better get this one. I have come to do blank, blank of him who sent me. Now, if Christ said those words, and we're supposed to be followers of Jesus Christ, I would think that our thinking would be along the same lines. I have come to do the will of my Father. You could say, I'm here to do the will of my Father who called me. We could better word it even that way. How about this one? This is a four blanker. Thy kingdom come, blank, 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 blank. Now, you know I'm kind of merciful. I've got to be, because these are pretty easy, I hope. Thy kingdom come, and while I'm doing this, it's important for our wills to start turning here to see the importance of what Christ was saying. And as we know, we went over, the question is, could you answer this now, in fact, because I explained this before. When you stop to think about that, why did he say that if he knew the Father's will would always be done anyway? Wasn't that kind of, why'd you say that? Is it kind of fill-in stuff? No, it's not. He did it because, as you know, he was reflecting on his total yielding and submissiveness to his Father. Of course that's going to be done. So if I get up in the morning, the most productive day that I'm going to have is if I say, show me your will today and give me the strength to follow that. So it's not just once a week. It's 7 days a week. This is where we need to be involved with God in his way. This is what he's called us to. He's not called us to a one-day-a-week adventure. It's 7 days a week. How about this one? Not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of God. Now, these are longer blanks. But he who does blank, 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 blank. But he who does blank, 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 blank. He who does the will of the Father. So you see how important this subject is when it's brought up so many times. A lot of people do a lot of things out there thinking that they do God's service. But it's not the will of the Father. How about another one from John 5, verse 30? I do not seek blank, blank, blank. I do not seek blank, blank, blank. Christ is the one that said this. I do not seek my own will. Shouldn't we be following the same path?
Is it more important for our will or for God's will? And I guarantee you that we'll be a lot more successful with living in life if we learn that. If we learn that complete submissiveness to God on a daily basis. Now let's go over to 1 John chapter 2. 1 John chapter 2 before we continue on here with this topic today. First John chapter 2, let's look at verse 17. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. Now, for this week, as I was down and working on the home in Georgia for a couple of days, I don't always do this, but turned on the radio a little bit. And it's almost like every time I hear some news, it's negative, bad news. Everything that seems to be said out there is filled with deceptions and lies. And it's not getting any better. I heard some people around that area, I overheard it, somebody saying, well, the economy's getting better. And I stopped and I thought about that. Do you know, it may appear that it's getting better, but every day debt is added. So if you were going more into debt within your family, could you say within your family, hey, our economy is getting better. Every day I'm adding $10,000 to my family debt, but hey, it's getting better. Do you see what's going on here? Do you see how many people are being deceived because the so-called economy is getting better? Well, look at the Dow. Look at everything. Look at all these other gadgets that are out there and markets out there that are being totally manipulated to reflect something that doesn't show what the state is of what's going on right now. So yeah, things may appear to be getting better, but those of us that are a little bit more savvy with some discernment and you're watching what's going on comparatively to God's Word, know that this is a facade. You know, you've heard the Scriptures where it says, peace, peace. I listened to our Senator Kerry, now our Secretary of State. Hey, he's going to patch things up now. Peace, peace. Finally, the Palestinians will love the Israelites and the Israelis will love the Palestinians and everybody will get together. And it'll be great. They can all meet at Papa John's. You know? And you look at that and you go, it's not going to happen. No, I applaud the attempt if it's truly there. It's just not going to happen. So here we are watching without going, by the way, into conspiracy theories. I don't like that. Are there conspiracies out there? No doubt. Biggest plotter of all is Satan the devil. So yeah, things happening behind the scene, probably. But you and I can't do anything about them, but we can watch. And what we watch can be reflected in how we conduct our lives in preparation for the return of Jesus Christ. This is the season we're getting into now that's reflecting our time coming to rule with Jesus Christ. That's exciting. So that's why it's so important to see this. The world's passing away. This stuff that we see that's very depressing is coming to an end. Are you going to be ready to go? Are you going to be prepared? Or are we thinking, well, when that time comes, then I'll get my act together. Too late. We're on a preparation program and intense education right now. That's why these are so important. Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12. You know, all through the apostles tried to encourage and stir up their brethren to see the same thing. Because, see, their time all came too. They all died. I was able to spend a little bit of time last week. I was wondering, why can't I just go and meditate for a while? Right there on top of the hill was a cemetery. Not a whole lot's happening there. So it was a good place to go and just sit. You know, and I walked around that. And if you take some time to see, there were people that died way before I was born. In fact, one died in 1854. It was 100 years before I was born that they died. And I was going, that was just them. Look, think of the millions of people. And when you go down and see that these people all lived at one time. And I thought about, what were their lives like? You know, you see all these tombstones in there. It really makes you think, actually, not about death. It makes you think about life because they lived. And I was just talking out loud sometimes. I saw this one person that died. I'm going, you're going to be back up again. All you people, you're can you hear me? You're coming back up. You're going to be alive again. You know, isn't it great to know that basic truth and the reality of it? They're not going to flutter like angels. There's going to be a resurrection, and they're going to have to be taught a way of life. That's fun, and that's simple, and that produces blessings. This is what we're learning right now. Romans 12, verse 1, here Paul said, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your body as a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, which is your basic service. This is the basics that God's given us. And this is not even above and beyond that we strive for this holiness, this God within us, to see how we reflect. You know, it's so encouraging when you get things like that, like the YWCO camp would say, when they see the reflection of, look, this is not above and beyond. When we finish up there, that place is cleaner than when we got there. And that's just our basic service. That's not really going above and beyond. It's what we do. It's what we're going to be doing at the feast. And when people see that, they say, well, you people, you're always happy. Sometimes it makes people sick because they're so miserable. Why are you smiling so much? Don't you have any problems? Yeah, lots of them. We got a ton of problems. But we're just a happy people because God actually kind of commands us to be happy and joyful. Yeah, we kind of have to. We got problems. This is our God. We got problems, but we got to be happy too. Paul said like twice, rejoice, rejoice, rejoice in your trials. Okay, I got it. So yeah, we cannot be miserable people. Isn't that sorry that we have to be happy people? And people actually see that? Wow, what a change in the entire mentality. Here in verse 2, it says, do not be conformed to this world. When you're out there for 6 days a week, the world will rub off on you. It's very, very difficult without God's help throughout that day. You get these little pieces of depression, these things about lying, and it kind of gives you a bad taste in your mouth unless you reflect back on God and see what He's doing and understand what your and my purpose is in this life. It's to fix these problems. So whenever I see a problem, I see how I'd fix it. So I'd go into our entire government, I'd fire everybody. I wouldn't know how to even start. How do you fix this? How do you fix it? Because with the enormous expenditures, how would you do this? How much time would you say? I'd think of how I would do this. Okay, I want you congressmen to bring me in your budget. I want to see all of your programs that you've got. And by the way, if any of them are your friends and your buddies, you're in trouble. And then you kind of go parse through them like that. But that would take a long time. You know, when Christ returns, it all goes in the trash and we start over from the beginning. It won't be administered like it is. See, our time is coming, so you don't have to get frustrated about it. This is going to happen, and it's going to get worse, and we know it. So it happens with the renewing of our mind. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And we can practice that every day in our lives, besides of what's happening around us, in the church, in society, and in our own personal lives. What is God's will in our life? Now let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and see here where we fit in with. Here's God's will within His church. See, if you ever talk to someone that says that could be disillusioned, it's always good to walk through it. It's always good, instead of getting all emotional, to walk through it. Why has God allowed all these divisions to take place within our modern time frame? In fact, somebody sent me a picture, I believe it was yesterday or today, of the Fine Arts Building in Pasadena being just totally dismantled. You can see it on there. It's, you know, I thought about that. I'm going, you know, just for a second, it's a little bit sad to see what was built up there, but you know what I thought after that? What we're doing in the work of God is more important than buildings. And I think that's one of the lessons that God wanted us to learn. You know, you can have all these nice and massive structures, just like they did going all the way back to Solomon's time with that beautiful temple. That must have been a horrendous thing to happen with the people, that's maybe the few people, the remnant of the people that really did care, that did follow God. Could you imagine their stomach as they saw that temple coming down and being destroyed, and the people being taken off as captive? And then they happen again, and they happen again. And here it comes into our lifetime, we see something that was built up in our lifetime that's being just dismantled and destroyed. And it could be sad, except we look upon it, God is building the spiritual building, which is more important. And guess what? We're going to start over again and get up, and we're going to start over again and get up, and we're going to start over again. And as I've mentioned, we're going to be good at starting over. So when Christ returns, we've got that skill down pretty good, don't we? We'll just start, but we don't throw it out. You don't throw it away. Like, I don't want any part of organized religion, so we tease, so you want to be a part of disorganized religion, which really is what it is. So, yes, we come back together again as a church, yes, physically, as a corporation, but more importantly, as a spiritual body. To recognize, I don't know exactly what God is doing out there with this group or that group, but that's not where my focus is. This is where God's planted us right now, and as long as this goes forward according to God's will, this is where we give our full effort to the best of our ability. And so he says in 1 Corinthians 12, Paul points this out in verse 4. He says there are diversities or differences, as the same word is in verse 5. Same exact word. Wonder why they use diversities in one and differences in the other. But it shows that's what it is. There are differences of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are differences of administration or of service, but the same Lord. And I could take that all the way back to camp. I don't know what I'd do without these people. Yeah, I oversaw the campus camp director, but if I didn't have my counselors, if I didn't have assistant counselors, I'd be dead in the water. There's no way I could survive without capable people to handle these children for 24 hours a day. And they needed helpers, so we gave them assistant counselors. And then we needed a staff to run all the activities. And it was organized that way. And they all did a wonderful job at teaching these kids and getting them to have fun. They had an absolute blast. And so that's how God runs the church today. There are differences of operations. So there are differences of administrations, but then differences of operations, but it's the same God who works in all. Some will look back and go, you know, this is where some were confused by this. Is there anything wrong with having one person in charge? No, not if the person's righteous. It'll work out pretty good. Is there anything wrong with having a board? No, that's fine. That's just a different operation. As long as they're all righteous, it'll work out. If they're seeking God's will, not their own. So there's different ways to do things. It's not that we're against one way, because we're talking a way to run a physical corporation as opposed to a spiritual, of which we know that Christ is the head of the church. See, no one but God can kick you out of a spiritual organization. Isn't that comforting to know? No one can. You can be kicked out of a physical one, but not out of a spiritual one. Verse 7, it says, but the manifestation or the evidence of the Spirit is given to everyone to profit everyone. For to one is given by the Spirit the word of wisdom, to another the word of knowledge by the same Spirit. So you can have people in the church that are very knowledgeable. Maybe it was because of their upbringing, their education, what their family fed to them. Very wise people. To another, faith by the same Spirit. You actually have people that are stronger in faith. I've seen some of those people, very strong in faith, to the point where I remember a lesson that I learned in it when I was at the Feast of Tabernacles one year and went snorkeling in Dominica, 15 feet of water. I lost that little piece that connects the breathing tube with the mask. And I said, oh, looks like that's lost. And my mother-in-law goes, why don't you pray about it? I'm going, that? Isn't God like more busy with more important things? No, he's God. So I said, this is the Feast of Tabernacles. I said a short prayer about it. I dove right back into that 15 feet and I dove right to it. I didn't even have to search. And I thought, God's taught me a lesson here. So maybe we've all been instructed in those faith elements too, where sometimes we've doubted or we've said, now maybe God's too important for that. I've seen people that have asked God for a parking space because they had too far to walk. Maybe they were being inhibited by something. It's not using God out of your hip pocket. It's contact with him all of the time and praying for these things. And there are those that are stronger in faith with those things, and we must grow in faith. That's how they're there to help. As my father-in-law was chopping down a tree, this happened to so many trees around their house. So about 20 feet up, he couldn't finish this one cut. And he said, oh, if there was just a small, he goes, can you just send a small wind? God sent a small wind, boom. Within that same minute that he prayed about that, trees around their house have fallen the other way. There was one that definitely needed to come down. It came down away from the house. So I've seen many examples of those things among many. And this is what he's saying. To another, the gift of healing by the same Spirit. To another, the working of miracles. To another, prophecy. Now, can't say we've seen a lot of miracles like we used to see sometimes in the past. Maybe there was a stronger faith. Maybe some of the things that have happened within the church that go all the way back to 1987 when the attack on healing took place. I still have the report that said, God's not so involved with your physical life, so you go ahead, you go see your doctors and do what you can do there. And God just wants us to fend for ourselves there. That was an extreme attack on the faith of God's people. Yes, can you go or should you go at times? Yes, that's totally up to you, but you should seek God first. First. That's the point. He is extremely involved, and a lot of people have gotten sick and have died because they haven't gone to God first. That was the lesson in the Old Testament. It's seeking God first. So that faith was damaged. When they thought, well, that sacrifice really didn't apply in their lives to healing. It absolutely does. The stripes are applied for our physical healing as well as our spiritual. That's why he went through that beating. If it was simply amount of him losing his blood, why didn't God the Father just have Christ's throat slit like you do a lamb? And the blood drains out. That could have happened that way. But he went through that horrible beating to know what it's like to suffer. So yes, the faith has been attacked. And maybe that's why you don't see as many miracles. Because isn't that what Christ said? If the faith was there, you'd see the miracles. No, there have been. There have been miracles that have taken place. Having two camps in North Georgia was a miracle for God to open up the door. So you could write some down that sometimes we forget because maybe it's not raising someone from the dead. Maybe that hasn't happened, but there are other miracles that still do. To another, prophecy. Now, this is not talking about somebody that's going to say, well, this is going to happen. But it could be the interpretation of certain things according to what's mentioned in the Bible. Some could be better with those prophetic or even inspired speaking from that point. To another, the discerning of spirits. That's an interesting one. I always felt like my wife was better than that. I believe that Mrs. Armstrong was good with that. I always wondered if God allowed her to pass away because she could smell the rats. So it's very interesting to think about that, but there are some even here that you just know something's wrong. You can, as they say, smell something that's going on. You can smell the cheese. Because where the cheese is, there's bound to be rats, as they would say. You know, I saw that within her, and a lot of intuitive people like that don't like that because their mind is drawn on that. They see something and it bothers them sometimes. So these are the gifts that are there. to another the interpretation of tongues or languages. Do you know you've got Mr. Meeker that goes all through this French region and is multilingual in that way. You've seen people that can pick up languages better. I know that's not my gift. I took 4 years of French. I can say bonjour. That's about it. I can talk Chinese and Spanish probably more than 4 years of French that I took. It's not the gift, but some have that mentality to be able to pick up languages really easy. And once they get one, they can pick up others pretty easy too. But God uses those as gifts to serve within the church. He says in verse 11, but through all these works that one and the selfsame Spirit, dividing to every one severally as He, speaking of Jesus Christ, the head of the church, wills. See, if we do something in the church that God doesn't will, we're going to be in trouble. And they're serious about this when they're doing the programs to look for helpers and ministers in the church. It's been mentioned. We don't want somebody in there that God doesn't want. It just won't work. If it's the will of men or of a man, it will come to nothing. It will not have the support of God and Jesus Christ. Now let's go to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians 5, and you can see now in three basic sermons how much information there is on the will of God. The Bible is filled with it. And I would think that this should be a top priority in our lives. Ephesians 5, verse 15, see then that you walk circumspectly. From the Greek word akribos, if you walk exactly or diligently or walk that perfect way, that takes watching and asking for the will of God that we can walk the right path every day. He says, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. How much more in our time are the days evil? Verse 17, wherefore do not be ignorant, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Do not be drunk with wine, whereas in excess, but be filled with the Spirit, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing and making melody in your heart to the Lord. When He hears that joyful noise, it doesn't matter how you sing. It's always enjoyable. You know, you could kind of come in here with a kind of a passive attitude. There's a reason why God has us sing. It does something to your heart. And if you're feeling low and depressed, you put on some good music or you sing some hymns wherever you are. I know in London, our song leader calls some of them prison hymns. They're the ones that we know really well. So if you ever find yourself in solitary somewhere, just start singing, Save Me, O God, by Thy Great Name. Only watch that very N word because they keep changing it every 5 years. I remember the original words to that. You got to keep looking. Okay, how was it worded this time? So some of those, they'll change on you. But yeah, the prison hymns are, if you remember the apostles that were in prison, and they sang, didn't they? So it's not really kidding, it's real. That you can find yourselves down sometimes and, you know, sing some hymns. Sing songs and play music that's very uplifting and that glorifies God. And your whole demeanor and attitude, you'll find, will change. Giving thanks always for all things to God the Father in the name of our Lord and submitting yourselves one to another in the deep fear of God. In other words, come on, brethren, let's work this out. Now let's go to Colossians chapter 1, verse 9. Going through some of the epistles where Paul was speaking to the different church areas concerning these things. And so you can see kind of what was on his mind as he wrote these epistles to the different brethren. Colossians 1, chapter 1, verse 9. Here Paul said, for this cause, for this purpose, we also, since the day we heard it, did not cease to pray for you, and to desire that you may be filled with the knowledge of His will in all wisdom and spiritual understanding. Wouldn't it be great every day you just could wake up and you knew what God wanted you to do? What a blessing that would be. To just, you know it. You're going to follow that path. And it just, there's something about, what a successful day. Do you ever go at the end of the day and go, that was a good day? You know, I'll never get everything all done. It'll never be finished, but it was a good, productive, positive day that wasn't just filled with physical things. But I was walking and talking with God, There are things sometimes that just happen that make that day go a lot better. It's wonderful to have those. So this is a process of learning this. That you may be filled with the knowledge of His will and all wisdom and spiritual understanding. Why? Verse 10. That you might walk worthy of the Lord unto all pleasing, being fruitful in every good work and increasing in the knowledge of God. Increasing. I don't know if you can ever get too much as far as the increase in the knowledge of God when you think about that one scripture. Seven as high as the earth. That's a lot of knowledge. When we see God in His glory, we're going to see how minuscule that we've really been. When you see every detail of life, it's so neat sharing with the campers all these details. When you show them, most people here have seen a horse. You know, when these campers for the first time see a horse that was out there, they see this, wow, they're in awe of it. I still am a bit. When you go up close and you pet these horses and say they could turn their head and knock me out. I had one, I made the big mistake one time of letting the reins go down. And it stepped on the reins and pulled its head up. And that thing, I played hockey all my life, I hadn't got hurt like that. That thing almost knocked me out. That they're so strong. And yet, God's given for us to ride on them, control them. These massive creatures, most of you saw that lion. You see how massive that lion was? Yeah, kind of like the ones that David slayed. Yeah. How massive that they are, though. This is all part of, all from the biggest thing down to that little glowworm that was talked about. Isn't it fascinating when you can watch out at night and see these flies that light up? How did God do that? Who came up with that idea? Oh, yeah, we're going to add some fireflies. That's what. Well, how is this going to work? Well, we'll put some kind of powder in them that when they fly around, it'll light it up. Well, won't it kind of blow them up? No, we're going to have it's not going to be blow-up powder. You know, could you imagine experimenting with that? Pow! Oh, that's not wrong powder. You don't want that. This is a design that's fantastic. So, if you go back to Job, remember the scripture in Job where it talks about behemoth, and we've always tried to put our interpretations. Someone tried to call it an elephant. I'm going, a tail like a cedar? And you see that little elephant tail. I'm going, well, it might have been like a newly planted cedar. But I don't think that's what he was talking about. There were some creatures, of course, that were so great that man killed them all. So you won't see them now. So where do you get the idea of a dragon? See, anything that man makes, he makes it exorbitant like a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Oh, watch out for those. They're going to come after you all the time. Bite your tires off your vehicle. No, that's not how they were. They were scavengers. They were afraid of people, too, even as massive as they were. So you can see all these things. What about the smoke that came out of its nostrils? Is that not possible when you see a little firefly? For maybe a possible chemical reaction? No, not the ones that are going to devastate cities. Here it comes. The city's gone. No, something that God made that was very unique and unusual, but he says, have you considered this great creature that man eventually destroyed? Behemoth and Leviathan. So these are creatures, by the way, when you see the angelic realm, you can get a piece of what they look like with six wings and heads that are eyes all that way. You go, wow, that's pretty weird. Not to God. It's not weird to God because he made it. He designed that. And I bet those are very beautiful creatures that, by the way, were in the Temple of Solomon. So these are all creatures and things that we see around us from the very biggest to the very smallest. And we still have those questions today. Why did he make mosquitoes? You know, because I know they don't like them in Kenya. But I couldn't see a millennium probably that might have those. God knows exactly what he's going to do about all that. But all these creatures were made and created by Almighty God. And so whenever you see something like that, I see the evidence of God and his creation. From the very biggest to the very smallest. So we're increasing in the knowledge of God. It says, verse 11, strengthened with all might, according to his glorious power, unto all patience and long-suffering, with joyfulness. Sorry, but you got to be happy. You got to have patience and long-suffering, and yes, with joyfulness. And I tell you what, when you work on it on a day-by-day and a week-by-week basis, you're going to find yourself being a happier person. You'll just find yourself being a happier person. And people will notice that, and you might not even notice your own growth. You know, you might be asking yourself, you know, I've kind of been happy all the time here. What's going on? I'm not as miserable as I was before. I'm not as grumpy. I don't complain when I wake up in the morning. Oh, here's another day. No, we ought to be the happiest people on the face of this earth because God is working through us. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, here's another epistle now written to the Thessalonians by Paul. So he gets specific on this, and when he writes these things, it must have been for a purpose. Something was always going on in these churches that he had to address that were problems. The Corinthian church. So this was things in society that had been spread around, as they do in our society today. I have some, you know, some of the hardest things for our teen camps, not necessarily for our preteens, but even then, as far as finding appropriate clothes for our kids. You know what a challenge that is sometimes? When the styles just reveal everything and the people go, what do I do? It's always a challenge because of what society brings. When I look back at the clothes styles and where they come from and who designs them, I'm going, you're kidding me. This guy designed women's clothes? He's fired. It's not the way. See, you get a lot of people with perverted minds that put things in society that just all of a sudden, that's the way they become and that's the way it happens, and it's a challenge for us. Well, it was a challenge for them too. In 1 Thessalonians, it speaks here in chapter 4, verse 3, says, for this is the will of God. See, you want to know the will of God? He says, even for your setting apart, that you should abstain from fornication, and that every one of you should know how to possess his wife in sanctification and honor. There was a marriage, and some of the marriages there, people were looking to other women, and maybe wives to other men. He says, that's not how you conduct yourselves in the church of God. He said, not in the lust of concupiscence or desiring that which is not allowed, even as the Gentiles practice who do not know God. He was saying, you do. This should be beyond you. This is not appropriate for a Church of God member. That no man go beyond and defraud his brother in any matter, because that the Lord is the avenger of all, that we may have forewarned you and testify. When a guy goes after another person, you're committing fraud on who's ever going to have that person. That belongs to that person who's going to marry them. So you don't go looking for someone else. This was the will of God. This was taking place. And it's happened in the modern-day Church of God. And it's worse. Because now you have pornography all over the place that tests a lot of people. So it says, for God has not called us to uncleanness, but unto holiness. Remember what Paul said in Romans 12. He says, overcome evil with good, with doing good. You take your marriages and you make them better. You know, we've got a lifetime with our husbands and wives to make things better, not to make things worse. You know, when you think of a good marriage and can look back, it's really neat seeing where you've come and where you are, and then seeing how far you got to go. As my grandma said, you don't know what love is until you've been married 50 years, and they weren't done at 50 years. It continued after that. I was glad to know I had a grandma and grandpa that loved each other. After a meal, grandpa would give her 3 kisses all the time. You never forget to do that. It was just automatic. I go, why 3? You know, why not change it up sometimes? So, but you know, you get grandparents, they always do things just like that. You know, 6 gin-soaked raisins before he went to bed at night. Why not 7? 6. And that's the way he do things. And he lived to 98 years old. So not too bad. But you learn and you watch. That's why it's great to have great examples. Not everyone has, have they? Not everyone has great examples in their life. And it's harder for them because they've not seen always the good examples. So it takes someone sometimes to break those molds and to say, I'm going to fight and work for this because Satan wants to tear it apart. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 11. So another part of this letter is still going to the Thessalonians. Here he says in verse 11, wherefore comfort yourselves together and edify, build, build up, be a house builder, even as you also do. So he was encouraging them that you're doing a pretty good job with this. And there are those of us today, by the way, I said, you know, within all the splits that we've had, if you want to know how to deal with that, if you've ever come into contact with anybody else within the other organizations, be a bridge builder. Don't accuse. You know, be confident in what you're doing and why you've done it, but be a bridge builder. No need for accusations. Build bridges because you never know what's going to happen in a year or 2 years or down the line when eventually Christ will come and bring it all together. Some people think, well, will he do that now? I don't know. But, you know, for bridge builders, there'll be a better chance of bringing his people together with his Spirit. So he was encouraging them there. He says, and we beseech you, brethren, verse 12, to know those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord. A lot of people don't like that. That just means they're overseeing, not controlling your life, but overseeing your welfare. And admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake, and be at peace among yourselves. Nothing better than peace. Now we exhort you, brethren, warn those who are unruly, comfort the feeble-minded, support the weak, and be patient toward all. See that none render evil for evil to any, but ever follow that which is good, both among yourselves and to all men. Rejoice evermore. Pray without ceasing, and in everything give thanks. And he sums it up by saying, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. So all those points, remember we went over many points in Romans chapter 12. Now he gives some more. So every time we do Bible study, we're saying, okay, let me see where I stand here. Am I supporting the weak? Have I been patient toward everybody, or am I short-tempered? All these we can take a look at. Am I in constant contact with God all day? You don't always have to be on your knees to talk to God. You can be driving. You can be walking anywhere to talk with your Father in heaven. And that's God's will. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 25, or 35. Hebrews. Now the days are coming, I remember some of the scriptures that are said about the end times. It speaks about the brethren being worn out when he is accomplished to wear out the saints. And I know sometimes we feel worn out, but you know, there may come a time when we can't do as much as we can do, but you keep going. I know we can always get our strength renewed, even though overall you're kind of going, I'm kind of tired. You know, I wonder how it was at the end of Moses' life when God took him. They was kind of going, when God said, no, you're not going to go over there. And it doesn't give the whole story. But I wonder if Moses said, yeah, he looks at Canaan, or where they were going to take over, looks at the Israelites, looks at Canaan. Yeah, I think you're right. I've had about enough. Could you imagine anybody that could be more worn out than Moses, even though but I could still see pretty good. No, it was his time. But I think really probably a really good feeling, if your days are finished, is to say that, you know, I did my best, made mistakes, but I'm kind of tired, and I'm ready for this. That'd be kind of a fulfilling feeling to have, wouldn't it? So Hebrews 10, verse 35, Paul says, cast not away therefore your confidence, which has great recompense of reward. Don't let Satan ever damage the confidence in what you're doing and the direction that you set about doing. For you have need of patience, that after you have done the will of God, that you may receive the promise. A lot of us would go, wouldn't mind having this come right now. You know, if the kingdom is as good as we're seeing it, I trade it all in right now. I have no reason to think that I need to live on this world any longer. I know some of the young ones are, you know, will go, well, you know, I kind of like to have a family, but ask the people that have had families. You know, would you, not that there's anything obviously wrong with that, but we have this outlook sometimes as younger that we're going to miss out. You, with God's kingdom, you're not going to miss out. Don't forget, Christ was not married and didn't have kids. He married the church, but he didn't have a physical marriage, so did he miss out somehow? I don't think so. It's just the way that we look at it. So he says, don't cast away that confidence. We're looking towards something that we're going to be receiving a promise if we're patient with it. Verse 37, for yet a little while, and he that is coming will come and will not tarry. James 4, verse 14. Now James gets in here as far as understanding and mentioning what the will of God is. And this is where you go to those cemeteries and you look at these tombstones. You see the people that have lived even for 100 years before I was born. You go, wow, this is pretty quick. You know, life to them, if they go, that went by so fast, and I was looking at 1800s, and David's a couple few thousand years before that. He's been dead for a long time. But here he says, verse 14, whereas you know not what will be tomorrow, for what is your life? It's a vapor that appears for a short time and then vanishes away. But a lot of us here probably think about that. What, I look at that past, what happened to that? What happened to yesterday? What happened to that one? And it gets frustrating sometimes. What happened to that night? I just went to bed. Boom, you're up. That wasn't fair. Because at least I like to feel like I had 8 hours sleep. Not two. It just goes by so quick. And you see that in your weeks. All of a sudden, we are awaiting the Passover. Now we're just about at the feast. By the way, this is a fun time. Enjoy this time. The anticipation of the feast. Because you've all been saving your second tithe, so it's not like you're going, where am I going to get the money? God's put a plan that we're saving toward it. So we've all got these plans worked out, excuses to the employers. We're all planning on going somewhere. And I like the anticipation. Do you know why? Because it's not over yet. The bad part is when it's over yet, you go, what happened to that? It's going to be hard to do a Yahoo coming back from Fiji. So, but you know, really, when you think about it, one time is going to be our last physical feast. Did you ever think about that? I've got it marked where we've gone. I've kept a list of where we've gone for the past 30 years. And all the different places that you can remember, one of these feasts is going to be it. And then the real thing is going to be here. And then, what do you think is going to be the best one ever? That one. You know, we always work on having the best feast, but see, this is the same anticipation that we've got toward the real feast that's coming. The return of Christ to rule over this entire earth. So he says, it's a vapor that appears for a short time and then vanishes away. For that you ought to say, if the Lord will, we will live and do this or that. But now you rejoice and you're boasting. So it was an attitude. This is what we're doing. Well, aren't you considering what God's will is? You sure about that? Do you have that much confidence in knowing what you're going to be doing? Or knowing what you're going to do? He says, you rejoice in your boastings. That comes from the Greek word alazonia, which comes from braggadocio. See where that comes from. A self-confidence, a boasting. He says, all such as rejoicing is evil. Therefore, to him that knows to do good and does it not, to him it's a sin. 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter 2. Peter speaks about the will of God as far as how we're dealing even with society and with the leadership that's around us. Don't forget, as much negative as we see, we're still to be respectful toward an office. We're to hate sin, but not the sinner. Chapter 2, verse 13 of 1 Peter, submit yourselves to every ordinance of men for the Lord's sake, providing it doesn't contradict God's laws or ways, whether it be to the king as supreme, or to governors, or to them who are sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of them that do well. Why? Verse 15, because it's the will of God, that with well-doing you may put to silence the ignorance of foolish men. Oh, you people, you're so anti-government. Oh, no, we're not. We're absolutely supportive of government, even to a physical standpoint, because we see that there is order that needs to be maintained, and we support that. The only thing we don't like is when it goes against the very, contradicts the very will of God and His Word. So you can talk that one out. That's very easy to do. Even talking about our very religion. Oh, you don't believe in that. Oh, no, we do. Just because we don't do Christmas and Easter, we don't throw, we absolutely, we just do what Christ said, and you can't find that in the Bible. Can you show me? Because we absolutely believe on the foundation of Jesus Christ. That's our foundation. But then we take it from there on the rest of His plan. So we talk that out. And it says, you put to silence the ignorance of foolish people that don't know what they're talking about. And the ignorance of this world, as you know, is getting worse because of the dumbed-down education system that teach rock poetry instead of reading, writing, and arithmetic, as they call it. Some don't even know the basics. When there was an interview with a college graduation, who are the four faces on Mount Rushmore? The girl says, college graduate, that's not my area of study. Isn't it sad? Sure, a Rice Krispies box, snap, crackle, and pop. They don't know the four faces on Mount Rushmore. You know, some of our history right there. Just that's where the dumbed-down educational system has gone. Verse 16, it says, as free, speaking of citizens, and not using your freedom for a cloak of maliciousness, but as the servants of God. Chapter 4, verse 19 of 1 Peter, here it says, wherefore let them who suffer according to the will of God, remember we went through that entire example in the last sermon, that was God's will that person was blind from birth. There was going to be something that was going to transpire that would be a miracle and also a stumbling block to the hypocritical Pharisees. Let them who suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to Him in well-doing, as unto a faithful Creator. Because He knows, as it's mentioned in 1 Corinthians, he's going off of what Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, that there's no temptation that God will allow to come upon you that you will not be able to handle it. He promises that. Whatever reason, God knows what we need in our life, and He allows things to transpire in our life specifically for our growth, that we can learn and grow. 1 John chapter 2, and oh, I went there. I'm sorry. Let's go to Revelation 17. Revelation 17 and verse 16. Now we'll go to the future. Revelation chapter 17 and verse 16. Look how God can work also. God's will be done. It was done back in the time of the Pharaoh. What do you remember? What he allowed to transpire unto Pharaoh, hardening his heart. His will was going to be done. And there were going to be lessons learned among the Israelites, among all the things that we saw. Revelation 17, verse 16, the 10 horns which you saw upon the beast, these will hate the whore and will make her desolate and naked, will eat her flesh and burn her with fire. So it'll be interesting to see the outcome of this, what this will look like. For God has put in their hearts to fulfill His will and to agree and to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God will be fulfilled. So, I look at this, see what's happening in the world, see what's happening in our country, and I go, you know, God does not relinquish control over anything. He knows exactly what's going on here. Here, it just leaves us to kind of watch and to take a look at it and see what's happening, to know has the scripture been fulfilled, the foreigner will take over. Seems like it, doesn't it? It seems like it. So, but what happens here is this is not out of God's control. Everything is happening according to His plan. Not one change iota. So what we see happening around us, we can look at it in such a different way to see what's going to be fulfilled when He told His disciples, don't worry about this. Just do what you're supposed to do. I'm doing something with your lives specifically apart from this entire world because I've got a time when I'm going to return and you're going to be put to use in fixing the problems of this world. So they'll fulfill his will and agree to give their kingdom to the beast until the words of God will be fulfilled. It will happen. So let's turn in conclusion here over to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. This was obviously very, very interesting man that we see some things that were not written about him because no one can really tell what happened to Solomon. Did he turn around? Did he come around? It doesn't really say. But here was a man that was a bit like his father, you could see, in that he took time to think. So he must have meditated a lot and he wrote things down to encompass a few books. And he said in verse 9 of chapter 12, "And moreover, because the preacher was wise, he still taught the people knowledge, yes, he gave good heed, and sought out and set in order many proverbs, such as I thought of one, in Proverbs 14:15, that says, the simple believes every word, but the prudent man looks well to his going." You know why I think of that? Because I see so many things that are advertised and pushed out there that are just not true. You know, when you see, well, the unemployment rate has gone down. So obviously they've shown more research into doing that on what's actually transpired. Now, sometimes we might not know all the answers, but my guard is so up according to what somebody has said. What you're getting in your foods now, what you've read on labels, probably not true. This world is filled with so much lying and deceit that you could almost be around skeptical all the time. Except we need to be prudent and not ignorant. So we still have to research. We still have to look. And we've got one of the easiest ways of doing it now. You want an answer to something? That's always correct, by the way. But if you want information, type it in. We've got more easy access to information now than we've ever had before. But then you're going to have to disseminate and ask God for wisdom in being able to judge between what's good and what's bad and what's true and what's false. But so many people just believe anything out there, don't they? They just are sold a bill of goods all the time. What do we do when we sell the truth that we have? What do we do? We don't say, just buy it. We say, number one, no, it's for free, but here's the requirements. We're going to give you the truth, but you've got a requirement. Well, what's my requirement? You've got to prove it for yourselves. We require that you believe it, not because I said it. The requirement is that whatever I say, you go to the Scripture and prove it for yourselves. Wow, that's a different sales job than you've ever had before. How many do that out there? That's the way God works. We've got to prove it for ourselves. So verse 10, it says, "The preacher sought to find out acceptable words, and that which was written was upright, even words of truth. The words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies which are given from one shepherd. And further, by these my son be admonished. Of making many books there is no end, and much study is the weariness of the flesh." Now that was from him. I see people, I remember going to the Biltmore. I don't know how this man had all, did he read all those books? He had a library, the kind that you've got to go up the ladder? Wow. Just so there's a lot of books out there. There's somebody writing a book all the time about what's happening in society. And so when I see all the books, I'm not done with this one yet. Sometimes it's fun to read a novel or to study into something else, but how good are we at this one? For some reason, a lot of people buy it, but not many people read it. I've got some books, I guess, too, that I thought were good books, but I haven't written yet. I've not read them yet. Oh, that looks like a good book. didn't read it yet. This is what Solomon said. There's a lot of more important things in life than just studying what somebody else has to say about it from their point. But this is somebody from Solomon, somebody by the name of Solomon, that wrote these book of Proverbs. I would think it'd be a good idea to go through another review of this, if there's so much wisdom in here. So after he takes a look at all these, and you remember the beginning of the story, because he says, you know, it's all vanity. It's just, that's life. Here we go again. Somebody had to get up this morning, get some cereal, pour it in, get the milk, wash the dishes, put it back, you come back and you have to do it again, and again, and again, and again. I would think that the woman would say, which they do, my mom had that plate, I was going to get a clock for the workbench, because it's the same for a man. The woman's work is never done. The men's isn't either. That wasn't fair. The woman's is not either. We still have to do oil changes every 5,000 miles. Rotate tires every 5,000 miles. I thought I just got it done. No, it's got to be done again and again and again. So the rotation of everything, well, Solomon saw this, and he didn't have vehicles, at least cars, maybe chariots. But he looked at life as a whole, and he just said, what's the whole point? He found it out. That's where you wonder, did he come around again? We'll find out. So he says here in verse 13, let's hear the whole conclusion of the matter. This is it. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. That's where he came down to all that. It was summed up in something very, very simple. Is that what we're doing? He said, for God will bring every work into judgment, so it doesn't matter what this person does over here or what that person does over here. It matters what this person it does that's looking in the mirror, that's asking for God's will to be done in our life, whether it be good or whether it be evil. So, brethren, may God's will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Do you know God's will? May the days now that we come until this holy day, the Feast of Trumpets, bring us all into a clearer vision and harmony of His will for us in our daily lives, and let us pray with all fervency and understanding, Your will be done.